Present. We will get going. Good morning, everyone. Good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon.
We'll move to adoption of the agenda. Does anyone have anything they'd like to add to the agenda for today?
Yes, I do. I'd asked Bernadette to put some things on, and one of them was left out, and that is to discuss the lease update. So could we add that, please?
Hey, Bernadette, did we catch that?
I didn't add it because I thought it was in our discussion that, you know, the recommendations from council were all coming through. Arnold, do you think that it will be addressed in that, or should we add it to the agenda item?
The leases would not have been in that update, I don't believe.
Okay.
Can we add that, please, then?
Yes.
Okay, we'll add that for discussion under new business. Is there anything else? All right. Then we'll do agenda is adopted by consent. Any errors or omissions in the minutes? November 3rd, 2020.
Yes. So, I'll beg your pardon. Well, can we discuss, is that included recommendations from council?
No, not yet. We'll move to that next.
Okay, all right.
All right, then the minutes are adopted by consent. Moving to recommendations from council. Now, these are just here for the committee's for information, but if anyone has any questions on each of them, we can take the questions now.
Okay. Can I start?
Yeah, go ahead, Paul.
Okay. One of them concerning the staff consulting the regional district regarding the request for the airport users committee for removing the trees on runway 29. Well, the wording is to remove or top trees by runway 29. What it should be saying is that it is in the flight path of runway 29 and on Pritchett property, because there could be confusion later on.
Okay.
And if that's the case, if the letter has already gone to the RDN, a follow-up letter needs to be sent to refine what the parameters are for topping those trees.
Okay.
Now, I know that we're going to agree and say, okay, we'll top the trees along the side of the runway. Well, that's not what we want. We want them on the approach path, right?
Right. When council decided to go on that venture, the decision happened. Obviously, staff that would have been having that conversation between Arnold and Mr. Weir would be involved with that too. With that discussion going on, I'm sure they would make it very clear to the RDN that it is the trees within the flight path of the runway, not that sure the language might not say some of the approach path of the runway, but staff would, I know, would make it very clear to the RDN of the intentions there. Arnold, did you want to add anything to that?
I can, yes. Yes, it was clear that the discussions we have so far had with the RDN, it's very clear that those are in the flight path and those would be within RDN property. They're not just adjacent to that runway.
Excellent. Thank you.
All right. Any other questions about business arising from the minister?
Has everybody received a copy of the bylaw for the establishment of the lease rates and stuff? I don't think I've seen one yet.
I haven't either. No. So
that was on the documents, the town site documents thing had been updated.
Okay, so we have to look for them. Is that right?
Yeah, anything that was recently adopted by council for the new lease rates would all be on the website there now. Yeah.
Okay.
However, I would say that I really looked hard to find the miscellaneous fees under the adoption. Under the amendment, bylaw 457.12, 2021, I could not find it anywhere. I found a couple of references to it, but is that because it's a draft bylaw?
It's on the minutes for the March 17th meeting. You can find a copy of it there. March 17th council meeting, sorry.
Okay, thank you.
I'm sorry, Robert. Are we going to just discuss each of the items in council in order, or do we have a general concern? Just talk about it.
No, they're just there for information. If you have a question about a specific one, go ahead and speak now.
I think there was some discussion. People want to talk about the item number two, the Astrum Flight School. If there's any sort of an updated sort of tactic.
Can I start with that, please? Is that okay for you?
Yeah, go ahead, Paul.
Okay. So I don't know whether where the council are aware that ASTROM is not a functioning flight school. It is an aviation data analysis. And if you go on their website, they've only had a Vancouver address for just over 1 year. And the guy that started the company is based in Beijing, and he's only been in a company for 3 years. So it is not, it is a proposed startup flying school. It's not a functioning flight school, and I hope that the council are aware of that. Probably they do not. So this, what I'm proposing here is an objection to what council has gone ahead. And I'm saying here that a permit should not be given to this second flight school. And I've got 3 points, and bear with me while I just go through each one of them. One, there'll be a significant increase in noise complaints, since there will be many more students in the circuit, and it's in our limited practice areas. So there'll be more complaints, and also more chance of collisions, which I'll get to in a minute. Our airspace is already crowded with so many off-site flight schools coming in to our airport, which raises another issue. But anyway, in conjunction with our already established flight school. Number two, it's a Chinese-based company that is an aviation data specialist. It's not a flying school. It has no history of running a flight school. They plan to bring Chinese students who will be learning to fly, most having poor English. And I'm sorry to be blunt about this, but we have to discuss this. And all the pilots in this room will have had experiences where it's impossible to understand the radio communications. Are we all agreed here, all pilots? Yeah?
We're the pilots here.
Yeah, so even the NAV Canada controllers in Vancouver and the other big centers, they all have these problems, and they're professionally trained. So, you know, we have general aviation pilots flying in our area. We have student pilots. We've got professional pilots as well. But there's an understanding that we need to communicate properly so each of us knows where each of us are and what our intentions are. And if we can't communicate, there is a high danger of collision. And so the introduction of this Epstar flight school poses a real danger to aviation in this area. But pilots will not know where other pilots are, thus dramatically increasing the chance of mid-air collisions. This latter point in itself could cause for a refusal of a business license here in Kuala Lumpur. I guess town can refuse a business license if it's a danger to the public. And in my opinion, this is definitely a danger to the public. So we already have an established flight school here in Kuala Lumpur. It's got an exemplary record for following noise abatement procedures, flying away whenever they can into the designated practice areas. I don't know whether Mike wants to talk about that. But this airport is small, and it cannot handle this proposed flight school, a school that will present our town with many problems. So there you go. And I'm going to send this off to Bernadette so at least council can review and really understand what they're getting into here. Mike, you got any comments?
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with everything that you said, and we chatted about this before too, and I raised concerns and second everything that you said. And I just wanted to elaborate too about the, you know, in addition to the circuit and having more aircraft just here locally close to the town, it also poses a danger to the surrounding airspace. There's not a lot of places for us to go to train, because clearly we've got all of the mountains up to the south there. But then we've also got really dense airspace off to the east where Victoria and Vancouver terminals are. So we're like heavily restricted just in the surrounding areas to go out and practice what needs to be practiced for aircrew training. And so this year we've added a second aircraft into our company, and when it's done kind of internally, we're able to really manage where we're going and stay out of each other's way, and also where the common kind of routes are for other general aviation aircraft. But if we start having, you know, more and more training operations happen here, we're really, really restricted to where our aircraft can go due just to local airspace and topography. So it poses a little bit of a challenge there with limited airspace. And if you've ever looked at especially the pilots in the room, the airspaces around Vancouver and Victoria, and they've got specially designated training airspace that NAV Canada has gone ahead and said, this is, you know, single use for training. It's called an advisory airspace there. And you hear horror stories of these places where multiple schools are now going to and using it as training. They have near misses on like a weekly basis, and there's a lot of issues that kind of arise out of that. So that was just kind of my concern, was the amount of traffic kind of in training areas in addition to the circuit.
Sure. I've added all these as notes. I'll bring it up. You know, when council discusses again, I'll bring it up. That motion that is on the agenda there from recommendations from council. When an airline or a flight school or whatever company comes to us, as everyone would know, they've got to go through their approval process with Transport Canada. But they need the operators or the airport operators sign off before they approach Transport Canada. So that's all this is. They approach the town saying we would like to consider operating out of your airport. Us as the operators and the governor of the airport said, okay, they need to go to Transport Canada, so we give them the sign off saying, go deal with Transport Canada. Once that has been dealt with, they will then come back to us. And that's when we'll start talking about operations, leases, and the whole nine yards. As of right now, it's just for them to start their discussion with Transport Canada, because they cannot start that until they have our blessing, per se.
Just a side note on that, there was, yeah. I can't remember how many years ago it was, we had two flight training centers here, and it was a disaster. It was very difficult, as with all the problems that Paul just described. Very, very crowded, very broken English, very difficult to say the least, and it did end up in a plane crash at the end of Runway 2 Bench.
Gord, you had something to add to that?
Yeah, so I got two items. One is that, you know, I like the idea of trying to help our existing flight school to prosper and grow and become bigger and better and what have you. I think Mike does an absolutely awesome job out there. And then the second thing, too, I was talking to an operator out of Campbell River today, and they indicate that they have a lot of the international students that are flying through. And so what the local air traffic control does, when, because they do run into situations where a guy's coming in and you don't understand what he's saying, he doesn't understand you, there's no communication or effective communication back and forth. So what the controllers have been doing in Campbell River is that they redirect all the other flights that, hey, look, nobody come in until this guy is down and clear. And because we have a mandatory frequency in Qualls Beach, we wouldn't have the opportunity to be able to do that. Wow. So that's just something to keep in the back of council's mind when it comes to that stage.
Yeah, that's it. On another note with that, I think we all understand that it was a letter of support, but why give them, you know, our support in the first place if we know from the track record that this isn't a good idea in the first place? And our company has actually been, or the owner of Feline has been in touch with who it is that's kind of heading this operation, bringing it to Qualls Beach. The direct individual in the plan was to originally, a year ago when the business was formed, to bring in international students, and that was the plan for here, and supposedly, you know, numerous aircraft and stuff too. So it kind of is a known item, and yeah, if we all kind of can agree here that it's not going to be a good idea in the long run, then why was it not kind of addressed to us in the first place?
So I'll speak to that. First, it came to council in camera, as these types of things have to come to us behind a closed door. Nothing will ever go to a committee before it goes to council. That's how just local government business has always worked. It'll always go to council first. The reason why I say in the recommendations from council is to make the committee aware that this is what we as a town are looking at. In council strategic plan that was adopted in 2018, which is then valid until 2022, one of the key projects in our strategic plan is to build and grow our airport, is to look at different types of commercial business and business as a whole at our airport. So from that is a key goal in our strategic plan. And staff have been working diligently in trying to make that happen, as it's not easy for a small airport to attract business and get business. We need to make our business, our airport a business, and it needs to be revenue positive as a business. And right now the airport isn't quite there. And so that's what we're looking at as a town. When a project comes forward, especially like this one, staff are going to do all the background work before it goes to council. And, as a counselor, the staff have my full trust that they did do their research before sending it to council. And it gets into Transport Canada. It doesn't mean council has approved anything. It's just to send something to Transport Canada. So any other questions? Mr. Schwab, do you have anything to add to that? Or?
Yes, I did. I thank you. I think you've covered most of it. And our goal is not to vet everyone that comes along. And I understand the concerns. We are not trying to run a monopoly. I appreciate that people have been in business here and have been for a while.
we still have to look at other applications. And as Councillor Filmer has said, that doesn't necessarily mean they will be approved, but we can't deny them just on the fact that we have one business already. Otherwise, we would never have more than one airline and never have more than one flight school.
All right, so we'll carry on from this one. Obviously, it will come back to the committee once it comes back to the town. I don't object to the timeline for that one, but when it does come back, guaranteed it will come back to the committee should we progress. But are there any other questions on any other points from the recommendations from council? Gord, go ahead.
Yeah, so item number four, the airport user fees, I have a couple of questions about them. The first one, I guess, is that the I'm wondering what type of support is going to be behind this bylaw to be able to actually enforce it, I guess, in some way, shape, or form. And that the previous bylaw that this one's replacing had a lot of the same information about the charging for takeoff and landing fees and what have you for commercial operators. But in the past, there's been no sort of mechanism in place where the town's been able to collect those funds. And so other than, you know, requiring people to be honest and you know, paying them that way. So currently the so this new proposed bylaw is talking about charging, you know, flying schools. They're doing takeoffs and landings and visiting the airport, you know, $400 per month, possibly per aircraft. I'm not sure. But and then it has that listed as an off. Site operator as well, which is a separate conversation altogether. But you know, I'm concerned that this you know, charging for flying schools coming and going out of the airport on a monthly basis, when no other airport in British Columbia appears to be charging take-off and landing fees for flying schools, that it's going to have an adverse effect that we don't want for the town and for the airport itself. So speaking to a couple of different operators of flying schools. They said that, well, if Qualicum Beach is going to be charging a landing fee, so then we just won't land there. And so as a result, you know, the restaurant gets less business, you know, less business for the other businesses in town, for guys that land and go touring the town and what have you. And don't get me wrong, if there's less flying schools, I'm actually happy, because that means there's less traffic coming in at a Qualicum Beach. So in a way, it makes my life easier, but it doesn't support the long-term sustainability of the airport. So I guess I just want to have a little bit more discussion about that and how it all is supposed to work. If anybody can help me at all, I'd appreciate it.
Sure. So with I'll discuss that. So with the new bylaw that's going to come up for full committee discussion later on in the agenda, that was one of the main reasons for this meeting was for the new bylaw to be discussed by the committee as council. I wasn't quite comfortable with where we're sitting, so that's going to come later on in the agenda for full committee discussion on the new bylaw.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I didn't see it later in the speech.
Yeah, all problem. All good.
Thank you.
Any other questions on the recommendations from council there? All right. Well, we'll move on from business arising from the minutes. Future airport building design layout suggestions received by Mr. Weir. Mr. Schwab, did you want to speak to this, or did a committee member have this to speak to?
I can address it first because there was, I think, a bit more clarification needed here. I think this had to do with the layout and design of the T hangers. So I think this was sort of some options as opposed to having the T hangers parallel to the taxiways. Some kind of potential about putting those T hangers perpendicular to the taxiways so we could put more in and then we'd have to extend the taxiway. I think that's where this one got on the agenda.
Okay.
Yeah, because I raised that last time.
All right. Are there any questions on that? All right. Perfect. Moving on. Prior notice required helicopter training, possible restrictions set to contact Transfer Canada to insert into the Canada flight supplement.
Okay. I guess I'll look after that one. I've been in communication with the Sand Helicopters since some length for the last few weeks. They are on site. I've talked to Brian as well. Transport Canada is now supporting us if we want to put some kind of restriction in the CFS governing how often, how many days of the week, times of day, whatever restrictions we care to put in place, for helicopter training. It's already in place in other airports in BC, Pitt Meadows being the first one I can think of. This came about because of ministerial inquiry from one of our residents who got all the way to the top. So that's still being worked on by Arnold and myself. It looks pretty promising. So right now, the local helicopter companies, Brian doesn't do it because he's a resident, but the other guys are going to pay their user fee, is what we're calling it, on the landing fee, monthly, weekly, or yearly, whatever they want. And they will require, and we haven't got this nailed down, whether it's prior permission required or prior notice required. Problem with prior notice is there's no restriction in there. You just, I'm coming, and that's the end of it. So the prior permission does give some kind of control to the airport to say, well, there's already another company going to be doing training that day, or it's a holiday Sunday. No, there's no training on a holiday. But once again, it's always open to negotiation. If it's the middle of a fire season and a company loses a pilot for a medical reason and they need to train, then we'd work on that. But that's where we are right now. Nothing's finalized, but it's looking really promising that we're going to have some fair amount of control over helicopter training.
All right, perfect. Are there any questions on that? All right, excellent. Moving on to the next one. Terminal opening hours, staff to investigate possible solutions to allow for extended hours.
Yes, I'll take this one again. This is Arnold. We have looked at it. You know, we're still struggling, obviously, with sort of COVID conditions and how often we have to send someone there. At this point, the restaurant is only open for takeout, and it's sort of brought things to a stall. And we have had discussions, and we're hoping by maybe May, early to mid-May, that we would look at potentially opening it for the 7 days a week. But I'm just not sure what the hours would look like yet.
I just add in there, the restaurant's actually open with their patio too, so they do have in-person traffic coming through the terminal these days. At least I was there 2 days ago, I think.
Yeah, okay, cool. Any questions on that? Yeah, go ahead, Gord.
Just sort of related, so is there talk about staffing the airport on a full-time basis, or are we going to be sort of doing the same way where it's a rotating staff member that comes through every day or so?
Mr. Swab?
Under the current budget, there is no talk of full-time staff at the airport. We would just have somebody there for the few hours that is necessary.
Okay, thank you.
Excellent, thank you. And last one there, directory signage staff advised that in the short term they will look into putting up guidance.
And this is me again. we've had some discussion on a potential grant that was going to pay for some signage, and I know there are some issues with businesses that are at the airport that want to hang a shingle of some sort so at least people can find them or know they are on site. We've had some discussions on potential locations for that, and I think it's going to be a matter of sort of going to planning with some kind of design or something at this point that we can put up a signpost and at least have businesses hanging from there or at least direct people to where, but potentially at the airport.
Excellent. Thank you. Any questions on that? All right. Moving to new business, review the Airport Users Committee mandate.
Yeah, I put that in there because I really wanted to know what our job was, because years ago when Brian and Greg and Jeff and I joined, it was an advisory committee, and our understanding was that council would ask us for our advice. And it seems from what you were saying earlier on, Councillor Filmer, that as the council sees it, they come to us after they've made the decisions. And I don't see how that works when between Brian, Greg, Jeff, and myself, we've got 120 years here on the airport. We've got more experience than anybody else on council. They should be coming to us and asking us suggestions. I mean, if you come to us beforehand and ask about that flying school, we could have come up with stuff that you didn't know about. And it may not have even gone that far. And so my question to you, what is the mandate for our advisory council? Does the council come to us first before they make decisions?
Sure, so I'll take that one, Mr. Slava, if you want to follow me up after that one. So I'll start. On that one, the Airport Users Committee is a users committee and is strictly an advisory committee to council. Council is the governing body and the operator of the airport. Some airports have airport commissions and along those sorts, where then whatever municipality is in that airport is that all permission and delegations from that airport are then sent to the commission. That we don't have that. The council of the town of Palm Beach is also the airport commission. We are the governing body of the airport. As an airport users committee, we will send things to you should we need advice. There's going to be things that council will discuss that we don't feel needs to go to the airport users committee, and council can approve that on their own. You get into very tricky business, and this should probably be able to handle that one, but it gets tricky when things are going to go to the committee before council, because we need to make a decision. If something is going to be sent to the committee, the council has to say it's going to go to the committee. Staff can't decide that on their own. Council has to say this is going to go to the committee. With the Estrom Flight School, a decision was not made. There was no decision. There was no, yes, the flight school is coming here. Again, it's just to help them start to put their first step into the door there. With the bylaw, no decision was made. I believe we did maybe give it first reading, and then we sent it to the committee. There's still second reading. There's then public hearing, then third reading, and then adoption. So there's still a long process to go before any decision is made, and a lot of things that we're doing with the airport right now. But just to answer your question, blank out, it is, you guys are still strictly an advisory committee to the council, should we feel. Mr. Schwab, did you want to add to that?
No, I don't think I have anything to add. I think you've covered it all.
Well, so one more question along those lines, then. Can I assume that what we discuss here at the committee is seen afterwards by mayor and council?
Absolutely. So there's obviously the minutes. The minutes are then sent to council. I have on my notes as a council liaison. The next time I sit down with council, everything that I've heard here gets portrayed onto council. Mr. Schwab would also add anything from there to council as well.
Okay, excellent. Thank you.
Yeah, Gord, go ahead.
Oops, sorry. For those of you that haven't seen it, Bernadette just sent out like an hour and a half ago or so an updated terms of reference for the committee as well. So that might be a good reference point for people to want to look at.
Okay, yeah. So council did recently meet, and we did adopt new terms of reference for the committee. Just essentially adding a council liaison to the committee, and then allowing the senior staff member, which is Mr. Schwab, and then myself as the co-chairs of the committee, and then Mr. Schwab and I will work back and forth between chairing the committee meetings throughout the year.
Adam, one small note there. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
A bookkeeping follow-up on that terms of reference. It's still referring to a representative from Chartwell Residence in the purpose of the committee, not in the composition under Part 6. It's just they've become a member at large. But I know that's been talked about for a couple of meetings about having the Chartwell Residence member to terminate as of their end of their term and just become a member at large, but it's still in the purpose of the committee.
Okay, I'll have staff look into that. What council did decide is instead of having a Chartwell resident, we just decided to use a community member at large. I'll have staff check up on the language of that one, but that was a decision, so it's not just Chartwell anymore, it could be anybody from the community to the city.
One similar kind of note, I've been added in as a representative for Sealand Aviation Commercial, and I'm not really sure where that name came from. The business name is Sealand Flight Limited,
right.
And that's where our business license is too. It's not a big deal, but,
No, that's good. Thanks. Staff, Bernadette, Mr. Schwab, you got that?
Yes.
Excellent. Thank you. Any other questions, I guess, on either the terms of reference or, the committee mandate?
Not so much, not the terms of reference, but when the mayor and council gives a no objection letter to the flying school to take the transport data, the town is done. The next thing the flying school will show up with after a long period is an operating certificate. To turn around then and say, I'm sorry, go away, pretty poor show. That operating certificate is a lot of work to obtain, and Transport Canada will give it to the flying school under the assumption they're going to be operating on a Qualica Beach or wherever they have this no objection letter from. So, not quite correct when you say they have to come back and we now start negotiating. That's probably true. We could turn them down. But they've gone through an awful lot of work with Transport Canada. The guys, you guys who got operating certificates, this is no small thing to get one, and the town has given their permission to this flying school to start down that road with Transport Canada. Pavel, you know all about it.
I would like to add something to this one, if I can. Like, I'm in the process of the Get OC, and it's like over 7 months, and the time, amount, and work, it's done, and financially done, it's enormous. Nobody can even see how much time and money you spend before you get operating certificate. Then you have to go back to the town and ask them, oh, can I start operation? And they will be saying no. Who is going to be responsible if they say no for the time and money we spend on the operating certificate? I don't know what I will be doing if the town say no, you cannot operate over here.
And so I don't want to get into an argument on this one. Again, council has to keep an open mind to the last decision. If we say, you know, if another flight school comes in next month and they've already got their operating certificate and they say, hey, we're ready to go, council might approve that lease and allow them to operate. ISM might then come back and we say, you know what, we've got two, we're not ready for four. And unfortunately, that is the business that everyone is in. ISM would have, that they understand that it's not a slam dunk. Everyone that comes to us, we've had airlines approach us in the last couple of years that have wanted to operate. They know it's not a slam dunk that they're going to get approval. And it is how we have to govern. And council, when I can say for a fact that when council has these discussions, we all understand. I work for an airline. I work there for, I'm going on 6 years with an airline now. And then this is the type of business that I deal with in the airline. I understand the whole operating certificates. I understand trying to go into new locations, opening new routes as an airline. I understand all of that, and council is well aware of the risk that we as a town could take on an image-wise if we say, you know what, yeah, we need the first step, we're not going to give you the second step. It's all understood, but unfortunately, we can't give someone a slam dunk answer. There's steps that have to be followed, and there's steps that we have to follow as well.
I fully understand what you're trying to say, but the first step should be more consulting and more research what kind of the business they want to do if the airport is capable to carry on. One thing is on the ground, other thing is in the air. As everybody knows, we don't have a tower control over here. If you have a foreign student in the control area with the tower, at least you can track them by the transponder or some other devices. Over here, they will be enlarged in the air. That's, I think, mostly concern over here.
I've taken note of all of it. I'll make sure when I sit down with council again, when we sit down together, I'll make sure that I bring it up for discussion and we'll keep discussing that.
Okay. I just doesn't want to say your process is wrong, but I think in the beginning it should be done more research and should be submitted the business plan, what they exactly want to do, and we can put the input if the airport is capable to handle that kind of operation. Because down on the road you can create yourself trouble, somebody will be come back to the town. So you always spend so much time and money to get OC and now you say no. It can get backlash to the town one way or other with a lawsuit or anything else.
John, go ahead.
I just like to say that I couldn't agree more with that. It strikes me we've got a number of really knowledgeable people here who have some real concerns about the flight school, and these have been voiced earlier. We could spend an awful lot of unnecessary wheel spinning. So I completely agree with Pavel.
If I can add into just kind of like a summary, obviously I think we all understand that the town has to be open to business, and you can't just say no at first glance and stuff. And when you think of kind of any other business, absolutely, we 100% all agree on that. When it comes to aviation in particular, there's a large amount of risk involved with any business and any flying. I think there's a number of us pilots in here, and every time we go into the air, we're accepting a risk, And that's going to come intuitively as well when, or instinctively, like when you allow somebody to operate a business, you're also allowing the town and everybody else who operates at this airport to now take on that added risk. And that's where these concerns arise from, that there's kind of more involved than just saying, yes, we're allowing a business to open up here. It's bigger than that with the safety factor.
All right. Gordon, go ahead. Then I'm going to move on.
Yeah, sorry. Just an administrative on the terms of reference. I sent an email to Bernadette already, and I'm sure she's going to pass them. I just wanted on the record that the composition of the committee, item 6, is missing tap holes for the ZFF engines. If this new company has to be on there as well. And also, I guess Greg from Airspan, I suppose, possibly. And I don't know if the air cadet should be on there as well. But just for reference.
Thanks. Excellent. Thank you. All right. Moving on to the next part under new business, the hangar construction proposal update. Mr. Schwab, this one yours?
I'm not sure if somebody might have raised it, but I'll take it. So we do have several applications for other hangars, and this ties into number 3 as well, and I don't want to necessarily jump ahead, but anything that's sort of been a proposal currently, we've had people actually sign leases already, so the minute we're ready to go, they're ready to go. But my understanding is that Mr. Weir has gotten a RFP ready for the sewer extension, and we are hoping to have something like that issued within the next few weeks and hopefully completed this year. So that will open up hangar construction for the rest of row B and C.
Wow. Okay. Excellent. Any questions on that? All right. Moving on to the next one, hangar construction, water and sewer extension.
Yes. Yeah, and that goes sort of, like, I did jump ahead a bit, so that is the sewer extension that will hopefully be completed this year.
Okay, excellent, thank you. Future business plan for airport, flying schools, charters, et cetera. So obviously we've had a pretty big discussion on this one. Is there anything else to add for new business?
I just had a quick question about the last one. Where can people be directed when they're interested in the hangar information? Because I actually see a fair amount of people and they ask about, you know, is there any news on hangars and stuff? Where can people be directed for that?
They can be directed to me. Most of the questions come directly to me, and I probably field about 2 or 3 a week right now.
Okay, great.
Excellent. Gordon, go ahead.
Is this the part where we're going to talk about the bylaw for the I'm not sure where it is in the
Yeah, I was actually, sorry, I thought it was part of the actual agenda. It's not, but but we'll bring the new bylaw into discussion now. Go ahead, you have your,
It's just sort of the question that I had before, in that I see the new bylaw being pretty similar to what the old bylaw is, other than charging a flat rate per month for takeoff and landing fees. And I guess the challenge that I have with it, there's a couple items, but obviously, if flying schools are specifically identified here for that are not local flying schools, so from the Nanaimo or Campbell River or wherever else they happen to be from, and there's not another airport, I don't think, in the province that I'm aware of that charges takeoff and landing fees for small commercial aircraft. So by charging this now, we're going to restrict we'll lessen the number of movements that we have that may not be important and applying for grants. We'll reduce the amount of fuel that we sell, or reduce the amount of business for the restaurants. So this isn't just people in flying schools learning to fly, but it's also people that rent an aircraft from, the guys in Boundary Bay or Victoria Flying School or Flying Club or whatever, because those are commercially registered aircraft. And so they would fall under this category for the way that the rates are calculated. And then another concern I have is that for takeoff and landing fees is a flat rate per month. So if I do, so here we are halfway through April and I'm going to be opening up in about another week or so, I'll probably only get, a dozen flights in the whole month of April, and yet I'd have to pay $400, which just seems a little bit lost. I understand for a busy month, but I'm working all every day and doing my regular operations just fine, but it seems a little bit a little bit expensive to be able to be charged a full month's rate
that. And I also take a little bit of exception. I don't mind paying a takeoff and landing fee, even though I'm the only skydiving operation in Canada that does so. I'm listed as an off-site operator according to the way that this bylaw is written. And I buy probably the most fuel next to Brian at the airport. I have a business license. I pay tie-down fees. We support the town as much as we can by doing other community events and what have you, and to be treated as well. Those guys are from out of town. It just doesn't seem fair. So the main thing is that with this new bylaw, I don't see anything changing in the operation side. We don't have full-time staff at the airport. So how will town be able to collect these fees for these out-of-town users if there's no – I don't understand so much. Sorry, that's like 5 minutes.
I'll have Mr. Schwab follow up on that. I will say in the draft bylaw, in the new draft bylaw, staff chose very smart language. It balances between a operator's fee and a takeoff and landing fee, and they're two very different things. I'm sure Mr. Schwab will be able to speak more to it, but there are two different things in the bylaw. It talks about an actual operator's fee and then takeoff and landing, and they're two different things. Mr. Schwab, did you want to speak to that?
Yeah, so we did go back and forth on this for a long time, and I understand the concerns, but I'm struggling because part of this conversation was there's too many flight schools, and now we're saying we need more flight school traffic, and our goal here wasn't to pick on any one industry in particular. Our goal here was to say that if you are a commercial operator and you are at the airport, there should be some type of fee. It didn't make sense for us to charge a helicopter company to train at the airport, but not charge a flight school to use the airport. We're not looking at private pilots. We're not looking at anything like that. Our intent here, and you'll see all the fees are very similar, was to say that if you are a commercial operator and using the resources of the airport, that we are looking at some type of fee. As far as how we charge it and collecting it, we wanted to get away from the per landing fee because that would require somebody there 24 hours a day to count every single aircraft that came in. That was not our intent. Our intent was to just charge what we thought was a reasonable amount, and this is going to council, so this is all open for discussion to companies that use their airports. And if you are a local operator and you are paying a lease on part of the terminal or one of the properties there, then our intent was to not double charge you. Our intent was to just make sure that commercial operators are paying to use the airport.
I think that's a really important part because I don't believe I read that in the bylaw where it said terminal or other space. I think it just said terminal. Because right now, like for instance, our flight school is paying the flying club lease fee and paying the paying the town as well for a sublease fee, and it sounded like this user fee was going to be an additional one there. So I missed that in reading the bylaw there, but I was a little concerned about that. That if we're not renting terminal space, that now we're having to pay a lease fee and a user fee.
Yeah, no. The intent was if you have a terminal or you have a hangar there and you are operating out of there. There would be a provision that you would have an aircraft that would sort of be covered under that cost. Obviously, if you're running 10 aircraft, it would be different. Then it would be an additional charge per aircraft after that.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Great. Gord, go ahead.
Sorry, I wasn't sure if Arnold was finished answering all the questions there or not.
Yeah, Gord, I'll just address one more, too, that you brought up. And I understand it doesn't seem fair if you only run two flights 1 month. Based on our previous structure, it was kind of, there was a zone for how many flights you had. Our intent here is not to soak somebody as much as we can. I think if you have a busy month, you'll win. And if you have a slow month, unfortunately, you'll lose. But our intent is to, if it averages out by the end of the year. We had the discussion with helicopter companies about having a weekly rate. So if you think you're coming in, and we could extend it to other organizations, if you think you're coming in with 1 week, maybe perhaps you choose a weekly rate, and after that you go to a monthly rate.
And sorry, my last question was, is there a mechanism in place to be able to collect these fees? Because right now, at the end of the year, I just send an email into the office and say, hey, this is how many takeoff and landings I did. Here's how much money I owe you. It's definitely on the honor system. is it going to be continuing on the honor system? Because if so, then this bylaw doesn't really have any teeth.
Jeff, would you like to answer that?
The Supreme Court, we got away intentionally from landings and takeoffs because no one can track them. So we just went through a user fee. Like the helicopters are going to be paying a user fee. We don't care how many auto rotations they do. So that's really where you guys get caught up in. You pay so many dollars for, right now it's a month, but as Arnold said, that could be reduced to a weekly rate if you're only going to operate 1 week in April, for example. But there's going to be nobody out there counting landings, and we don't expect you to submit something saying I did 4.5 landings. I've seen your landings. So 4.5 landings this month, you know, that sort of thing. So it's strictly just a user fee for the airport. Now, commercial guys coming in off-site, that's a really good question. We don't have a real good answer for you right now. We have to put something in there because people are using the airport. Lately, I've been watching night operations on one of these apps. There are dozens of airplanes coming out of the lower mainland flying either to Qualicum to do a touch and go continuing on or overflying Qualicum at night. I don't know how many are doing it during the day because I don't look at them. So the lower mainland is maxed out in areas to do their flight training, same with Victoria, and they're using Qualicum Beach. We went through this with flying schools. We've been doing it for a few years now where we have to call them and say, don't come, you know, we're too busy. How are we going to collect the fees if they do come during the day? One Cessna 172 looks like any other. So right now we really don't know.
The only way is to Google the registration, and you know, we get clients from all over the place. Exactly.
Hang on. Yeah. Who's gonna register? Who's gonna write down the registration?
Exactly. I think that was the question.
We don't have, even if we had somebody out there, they can't sit and watch and write down registrations. That's just not part of it. All the other areas that do that sort of thing have an Air Canada presence, and they have an agreement with the flight service station or the tower, and they exchange information. So that's very true. We're one of the very few places that operate Class P airspace with the traffic that we have now.
Would it be worth sending out a notice to these commercial operators? Because you're absolutely right, and I think that was Ford's question. I'm curious about it too. Is how do we charge these commercial operators that are out of town?
Charging them as much as we can.
But how? How do we know which ones are coming in and which ones aren't?
We don't. We have no way of detecting that. However, we'll have a bylaw in place allowing us to do it. In the CFS, and I presume pretty soon we're going to be talking about the noise abatement procedures. Let me stick something in there now. The noise abatement, helicopter operations, commercial landing fees are all going to be an amendment that will be put in the CFS shortly once we agree on actual content. Okay? So the flight school out of Bombay Bay lands, parks the airplane, goes in, has lunch. He's got a 50-50 chance someone might see him, take his registration, and then bill the flying school. Realistically, probably not going to happen. But we have to have that capability until something else happens where we get so busy we can start tracking it, or it's worth having some sort of system in place. But you go figure it out. How do we possibly do it? I see your hand up, Pavel. You got an idea?
Sorry. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. I got an idea why we don't make a deal with the Comox airspace, because they're monitoring 1728 anyway. They can write down the registration of the airplane attending landing. And that will be the same for the IFR, and we send them invoice monthly, those flying for whatever, landing over here in the area and collect the money for the IFR renewables as well.
Sounds good on paper, Pavel, but it doesn't work that way.
I understand, but...
First, everyone stop. There's one person talking at a time.
Yeah.
Jeff, go ahead.
Comox is military. So that's the first thing. You have to go through Ottawa to get permission. a huge problem. NAV Canada does not give out information without an agreement in place. So it would be a big, long, complicated process for NAV Canada to do it. They will do it once in a while. I phone them and they'll give me an ident. But we want something a lot more robust in place. This is not, we're not going to solve it today.
No.
Just so you know that we have looked at all this stuff. It is difficult to track aircraft in an area that doesn't have a control tower. It's virtually impossible. Because there's nobody here actually writing things down. And to ask someone to do that would be incredibly, time consuming. It's not even the beginning of it. I think that's enough on this for now. Just know that it's in the bylaws, so we have the capability. There was a real quick one that I'm going to shut up. There was a twin turbo sitting on the ramp for the last week or so. You guys seen that?
Yeah.
Okay, it belongs to a numbered company out of Alberta, out of Edmonton. So we send him a bill for a week and how many landings? I don't know, at least one or two. So we can do that. But Cessna's coming in and out. Right now we have no way of handling that.
Corey, go ahead.
So what I've seen other airports do, and it's just a suggestion going forward possibly, that a lot of airports, they say that they don't charge the commercial fee for airplanes that weigh less than 2,500 kilos. And I think with the understanding that hopefully they're buying fuel and doing other things, I guess I look at it and I say, we have no way of collecting it, so why even have it on the books as a charge in the first place? So, because in talking to a couple of the different flight schools, they said, well, if there's a fee that's on the bylaws that says specifically flying schools have to pay this money, they're just going to avoid coming here so they don't incur the fees, which ends up hurting the restaurant and other businesses. So
I'm not convinced it hurts the restaurant board. I don't think these guys are stopping. I think they come in. What I've been watching on the app, they come in, they do five touch and goes, and they go somewhere. They don't sit and have lunch.
Yeah.
Because the students got a
plane. But what about the guys that rent the plane, though? Like, not the school, but the guys that rent a plane.
We're not charging those guys. The aircraft is commercially registered, but if it's a private pilot flying it, there's no charge. I know that's the difficulty we're having.
Where it's like...
I feel bad. It's a tough thing to figure out, for sure. So.
Mike, go ahead.
And also...
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say, on that same kind of idea, Jeff, it's similar to what they have in Ticino, and you're probably aware of it when, you fly in. If I go, like, for example, if I decide to rent my company aircraft, which sometimes I do just for pleasure, and then go fly to Ticino, they have a $10 or $15 landing fee or something like that. And again, this is an association with NAV Canada because they have the control zone there. And then they bill it directly to, so if I decide to rent this commercial aircraft as a private pilot, I still have to then pay. It gets charged to my company. The company then sends me the bill, or whoever the renter is. It's not necessarily me. Whoever the renter is has to then pay the landing fee. And so if the school is being charged this $400 or whatever it is, then it's either up to the school to pay it or to then charge their renter. Now the renter is like, what? I have to pay $400 to rent this Victoria Flying Club airplane to now go fly to Claughton Beach for lunch or something like that. That's, I think, maybe what Gord was kind of getting at there, is because then it then bounces back to the renter because it's a commercial aircraft.
Okay. That would not happen because we don't track it like that, Canada.
Right.
So we wouldn't know the guy was...
That's right.
...was renting. We just know he's a private pilot. So...
Gord, just to touch on one thing you said, you brought up an interesting point, and so I wanted to speak to it. You talked about... just charging off of aircraft size. Now, when council was discussing airlines as commercial operators, and not just all commercial operators, but just as an airline as a whole, we were struggling with the debate whether it's going to be off of a head tax or whether it's going to be off of aircraft size. And I know when we were in the meeting, Mrs. Fayon, as our city manager, town manager, he took notes and said that he'd start looking into that. I want to start looking at the airlines itself, whether it's going to be off of based on head tax, or off of aircraft size. And actually, if you started going that way, we could then try to extend that to other commercial operators trying to do, you know, if we start looking at different, whether it's operating fees off of aircraft size for, it's obviously, it is being looked at, so hopefully we'll have an update on that.
Cool. All right, and I have just one more question about this thing, is it's not, there's asterisks all over the place, about, and it says if you have, including one aircraft, so if you have multiple aircraft, you double the fees then? Like we have two aircraft. So
Mr. Schwab, you want to take that one?
Yeah, I'll take that one. Yeah, the intent was that, you know, if you're leasing space or you're already paying some kind of fee at our airport, you know, one of those planes would be included. So if I use the flying school as an example, if they are renting terminal space, one of their plane monthly fees would be included in that. But if they wanted to run multiple planes, that cost would then be, that $400 a month would then be per plane. So, you know, if they say, well, we're renting space, but we got 10 planes, it's a little harder to swallow. So our intent was to say, if you're operating, you know, as a business, you get a certain amount included, but as your business grows, your sort of requirements on the airport grows, your fee should increase.
So to make it more specific for us, because I'm the one asking the question here, so I have two aircraft, and I've been considered here apparently as an offset operator. I do pay tie-down fees, and I buy all my fuel at the airport. Would you want $800 per month from me then?
That is the way the bylaw is written, correct.
Wow.
Right, so let's provide clarity here. The point of this bylaw going to the committee as right now is provide feedback. So if there's any errors or corrections that you want council to look at, it's up to the committee now to provide advice to council for us to proceed to the next step. So if there's advice or recommendations or changes that you'd like council to look at, now is the time to get forward, and staff and I will note those.
I think in times with COVID and with everybody struggling, especially in the aviation industry, that there has to be consideration given on specific cases. And we can't iron fist everything true. I don't think council can iron fist say this is cast in stone. I mean, if you do the numbers for what Gordon has to pay, it's astronomical. I mean, he's going to lose his shirt. He's going to be out of business, and we're going to have nothing. I think there has to be some kind of a ceiling or cap put on it. And I mean, Gordon, how many landings and takeoffs do you do on a weekend with two airplanes that are going, you know, 10 hours a day or 8 hours a day? I mean, there's literally hundreds of takeoffs and landings, but then in April, I mean, perhaps it should be prorated. So you don't start till the 20th of April, well, you shouldn't have to pay a full month's use for that. But I think there has to be some kind of a common sense. If we're going to drive aviation or the business, then shut the airport down, that's all we want. This is a waste of time if we're going to pound the, you know, drive everybody financially out of business, and the economy at this time with the aviation industry is dire. So I think everybody on this meeting can agree with that.
Mike, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to suggest one thing. Like, I think the user fees are reasonable, maybe for one aircraft, but additional aircraft could be discounted, you know, half or a quarter or something like that, rather than, you know, because the usage really hasn't upped. You know, for example, I started out here with one aircraft for myself, and there's now another instructor and another aircraft, and really our usage here hasn't doubled, just because it's an additional aircraft, and it's probably the same thing with Gord there, where really the second or third aircraft shouldn't be the same amount. And then the other thing that it was in the original agreement that Sealand has with the town was that we had peak season versus non-peak season fees, where we were paying, again, half the cost for non-peak season, like in the winter. We're obviously not able to fly as much, and the same thing with Skydive. They don't offer it in the winter. Then in the spring and fall, you know, they're at like probably less than half capacity of what they're doing through the summer. And so, like Brian said, it could be prorated or it could be discounted as a non-peak season kind of fee.
Okay. No, that's good. I've written that down. I definitely agree with what you said there. Pavel, go ahead.
Okay, I would like to say, in my view of operation, I'm going to have two airplanes operating over here. One will be on the line, other one is as a backup plane. So I'm paying still the same fee as a backup plane for the landing fee, and one operational airplane, because I can rotate those airplanes between the maintenance and operational. So in my view, it's unfair too, paying double for the two airplanes instead one airplane as a standby. That's what only I can see on this issue.
Okay, okay. Gord, go ahead.
I urge members of council and even members of the committee, if you haven't seen it yet, to read the COPA study from 2017 about the economic benefits of airport operations to local towns and government. This fee structure, I think, is not beneficial overall to the substance of the operation of the airport or the town itself. $800 a month is, and literally, keep in mind, not a single other operator in Canada pays a penny. And I don't mind paying something to support the airport. You know, the last 2 years I've spent over $130,000 on fuel. But at the same time, it comes to a point where it's just a money grab, and you're going to end up shooting yourself in the foot at the end of the day rather than helping yourself. You know, at $800 a month, it's getting to the point now that it might be cheaper for me to just build my own runway someplace else. So, or I could operate from the Nanaimo as well, I suppose. But, yeah, it's just, it's not bringing in business, which is what you want. It's not building the town. It's putting up a barrier and a wall and preventing business from being able to do more for the town and things to prosper. So, if anybody hasn't read that COPA thing, I will email it out to everybody after
the meeting. I've sent that to council and to Arnold and Jeff. Everybody should have had it about 2 or 3 years ago, but it's no harm in sending it out again. It's a great document.
Yeah, it step-by-step breaks down how to make money at an airport and what kind of guidelines and lease things, business things, you know, public, all that kind of stuff, what the town can do to bring in money, how to structure it, all that kind of stuff. So I would push for that as well.
So thank you. Any other things we need to discuss off of the new draft bylaw?
One question that I have is that a terminal use. We talked a lot about, you know, terminal space use and renting and leasing and all that kind of stuff, but there's no mention of that anywhere in the bylaw. So, for instance, our business is looking to potentially rent an office or two of the terminal, but we have not. I've been in discussion with Arnold about this, and it was kind of waiting for this meeting here first, but I'd like to see something kind of done and maybe published about that. He said, you know, it might not be a fixed rate, and that's okay, but I think there should be, I don't know, a process of how to do that, because I've been saying to council or just the town that, you know, we're ready to move in whenever we can get a lease ready for that. That, you know, there's, I don't know how much the grant was, but that terminal was renovated, you know, nearly a year ago, and there's been nobody in it in the past year.
Mr. Schwab, you want to speak to that?
Yeah, and in my discussions with other staff, there is not necessarily a set rate in the terminal. There are different locations. Obviously, there's front counter space, there's sort of back office space. There was a general guideline that was used in the past, and the discussion was, it hasn't been updated for quite some time, I think 2014. The discussion was around, you know, what those increases look like, and it was probably a 2% sort of cost of living increase over the last 5 to 6 years. And those spaces, I think, are just sort of in discussion now because we have some people coming forward who want to operate aircraft or airline businesses from there, and how much space we were going to reserve versus how much space we would sort of lease out currently. So I think we're close to a decision on that. You know, I've been discussing with the corporate administrator and the CAO, and we're just sort of finalizing some decisions on those.
Yeah, Gord, go ahead.
Sorry for asking so many questions. So if the will this existing bylaw as it is go directly to second reading, or will staff be changing it around a little bit or whatever? Does it have to go back to a first reading again? How does that work with the process, Robert?
Yeah, so the next step, staff see that there are changes that need to be made, that can be made into the bylaw because it's still a draft, and then council would then move on with those. So obviously council would be aware or informed of what changes have been made, and we'd move on from there into second reading. Yeah, so...
And, Can we get a copy of that before it goes to second reading? Or does it, I guess there's opportunity for comments after that, I guess.
Okay, so it would be added to the agenda. So, I mean, it's, as residents or users, do you see it go onto the agenda, the new draft, or the draft would be part of that agenda. I'm not sure what agenda it would be part of, but it would be added to that agenda, and we move on from there. As for public input publicly to council, up until public hearing, it is your job to, if you see changes or errors in there, send them our way, as well as obviously you've spoken some here. When the public hearing gets called, you've got your opportunity then to speak publicly to the community and to council. Once the public hearing is closed and it goes into third reading and adoption, there's no more input from the public. So once the public hearing is closed, it is done, and it is then council's job to then finish it up. Mr. Schwab, do you have anything to add to that?
I do not.
Okay. Brian Gordon, did that answer your question then?
It does, thank you.
Okay, thanks. Paolo, go ahead.
I would like to add one more item. It's about the head tax in the terminal. And as I did lots of research about the head tax for the different airports. Like, Tokyo doesn't have a head tax, but they have a landing fee, so I fully understand how they working together with the landing fee and the head tax. Then I approached the Boundary Bay. Boundary Bay have an $8 head tax only on outgoing passengers. And then I approached the YVR South Terminal, which has a $5 head tax only on outgoing passengers. As per this new bylaw, there's the two head taxes, outgoing and ingoing. So, and it's going to be like $10 each way. So it's $20 each passenger, basically in and out. So I think it's a little bit unfair to the airline, which is supposed to start over here and start working over here, charging both ways in the outgoing and ingoing. That's only what I can have a comment to this one.
Any questions from the panel?
Vancouver has a $40 landing fee.
Excuse me?
Vancouver?
I have a landing fee.
$40 landing fee.
Landing fee, $40, $9 and half Canada fee.
That's right. We don't have that.
I understand, but you have a tax on the $400 a month fee as a fee. So I think that should be determined. I can pay by the landing or I can pay by the head tax, but I think the outgoing and incoming head tax is a little bit overcharged than other airports are using. Boundary Bay doesn't have a landing fee.
Okay, thank you. I've written that down, and I'll bring it up with council, and I'm sure staff has taken note of that as well for what we're trying to discuss Texas for airlines. Any other questions or comments or advice with the new draft bylaw?
With that same kind of note that Paolo was talking about, I just wonder if like the comparison has been done to other local airports. You know, Jeff mentioned Vancouver there, where we can't compare ourselves to Vancouver, though, or like the airport just in general, to their fees and stuff. I just wonder if that research has been done to compare around to local places, even Nanaimo, right, would be you know, somewhat more similar here in looking at what kind of fees they have.
Yeah, so I'll have staff speak to it, but I'll speak first. Staff, before anything goes to council, there's tons of research and due diligence done before anything goes to either to the public or to council. Because, you know, at that point, their work is done, and it's our job then to wrap it up and finish. So I can promise you that there was lots of research done. I do agree with you. We can't compare ourselves as an airport to Vancouver International. You know, as a city, or as a town, we can't really compare ourselves to the city of Nanaimo or the city of Victoria. It's the same kind of business. We as a council look at communities our size, and staff would have for sure looked at airports our size and the way things have been, not only just on the island, but around the province. Mr. Schwab, did you want to speak to add to that?
Yes, thank you, Councilor Filmer. We did. We spent time looking at other airports. We spent time looking at our own fees. And our own fees in the past and some sort of reasonable compromise. And, you know, to Pavel's comments about the landing fees, there's always room to move. We're not, you know, this is the first reading of this bylaw. There will be comments. We have had issues in the past, though, where people played with those numbers because, you know, they were going somewhere else, so it didn't count that they landed here or took off from here. You know, we're just trying to avoid a lot of those issues and close some of those loopholes. But this was not a process where we did sit down one afternoon and say, hey, let's discharge this. This took literally months to kind of look at other options and look at other operations and look at how we do things. And, you know, it's not a great compromise necessarily from some people's perspective, but that's how this process works, is there's input, and ultimately this is council's decision, and they are listening to the feedback, and we'll come back with something that we hope works.
All right, thank you for that. Any other comments or questions? All right, seeing none. Number six, we do have future agenda items for discussion. So does anyone have anything that needs to add to a future agenda?
You haven't brought up my added lease.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, okay, go ahead, Paul.
I just wanted to find out where we are at with the T-Hanger leases. Can you update us? Because I know I've sat down with Arnold and Jeff about this.
Yeah.
Haven't had food from quite a while. So how are we doing with that?
For sure. Mr. Schwab?
I do have some of the information from Paul here, and I've done some research on some of his questions. My hope is that I have a meeting soon with senior staff here, because it has been a few busy months. We are looking at the leases. There hasn't been a whole lot of, let's say, incentive to move on some of the leases. I think it was developed over a period of time, the language in the leases. It was developed from our lawyer and a tenant's lawyer, and did go back and forth. But, you know, some of those clauses we are actually discussing, and hopefully we'll have a look at them.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Looking forward to the meeting.
Excellent. And I did miss one thing under five under new business is the round table. We'll just start with Paul. Paul, you have some guys for a round table?
Yes. Just wondering also, this comment from Jeff here, how are we doing with the signage at the end of the runways for avoiding the noise abatement stuff? I know you got some ideas. Where are you at with that, Jeff?
Okay. Arnold just suggested I wait for the round table, but this is a good time to do it. At the last meeting, we discussed changing the noise abatement slightly. If those guys would try, remember, instead of going to 1,000 feet, we're talking 1,500. Since then, I've done a bunch of research, talked to the new people at Transport Canada, and we are cautiously optimistic, that's a good word, that we might be able to get the old sub-turn after takeoff back in. We would not get it in for landing. Landings still are straight in. So Qualcomm Woods is still going to get overflights because they're on the center line of the runway. It's regretful, but it's the way it is. But we are looking at departing either runway, climbing to an altitude. And I've talked to some of you guys individually. That altitude is still in flex, 500, 700, I'm not sure. But you're climbing to an altitude and then turning south to a heading. Then continuing the climb to circuit altitude, and then you're done. This would solve what I think was in the minutes of problem pilots, if you guys all remember that. Problem pilots are simply those guys who fly their airplane high power settings and noisy. By forcing them to turn south, we may resolve some of that issue. So right now that's work in progress, I guess you could say. But it's I'm optimistic we'll get it in the near future. Before I submit anything to Transport, I'd like to run it by you guys. Now, we've got another user committee coming up in May.
There is a scheduled one in May.
Yeah, so if you guys are good with it, in May I'll have the final draft of revised noise abatement procedure. And once we've done that, then I'll go to Transport and send it in for their action. It'll then go into CFS and it become law, as is now.
Well, that's great, Jeff. So I love the turning south, as you're saying, and I still would like to see the 1500 because it takes above the circuit height and one person, and it also stops them from thinking about turning north again. So I agree, you go south, but then continue up to 1500 before you proceed on course.
Okay, if you turn it south, we can only run to 1000 above ground, and then they no longer go on to Qualicum Beach. They're now on in the en route phase. So we could turn it south, flying to 1200 circuit altitude. But that will put them out over, you guys, you're going to have to hang in here. This is technical. Put them out over the golf course. So it's unlikely the guy would go from the golf course and turn around and fly back over Qualicum Woods. He'll probably continue wherever, you know, continuing to the south and then east. Or he'll continue climbing, and at that point, that's fine as well.
Yeah, unless you're Michael Walker.
What's that?
Unless you're Michael Walker.
this is daytime only. The reason we can't ask him to turn at night is because we do not protect that area at night. The only area we protect at night is straight out the runway in that fan-shaped cleared area. So at night, it's going to be the same as it is now, except we're going to say you've got to go to 1,500 feet or 2 miles. So it'll give them, it has to be that much higher. But at night, they won't let us do that turn after takeoff at night. Because, we can't guarantee something or fly into something. Anyway, I'm going to send it around to most of you guys in the next couple of weeks. And then next committee meeting, we'll discuss it. If you're good with it, it goes, and we hope to get it anyway.
Thank you.
Now, Brian, you'd be one guy. If anybody sees a flaw in this, let me know.
Yeah, I think the biggest comment I would have, Jeff, I mean, we've been here like 28 years now, and I mean, one thing I've learned is you can't legislate stupidity to the guys who are going to not look at their CFS. You can only do the best you can do by putting it in the procedure part of the Qualicum Beach. In the CFS, and that's just going to be where it lays. The guys that know it are going to adhere to it of courtesy. The ones that aren't going to look at their books aren't going to know the difference. And that's just the way it works. I mean,
we've been kind of remiss to the airport folks here. We get a lot of calls, especially from Claudia at the farm.
Yeah.
And we get a fair number from Qualicum Woods. We investigate every one of them. Investigate means look at the videos. And I'm going to say about 20% of them are valid. A lot of them are calls that were not valid. The airplane's already at 1,000 feet when they turn north. Well,
yeah.
Legal. But, so we investigate every one of them. We have had no repeat pilots. Not bad in all these years. We've had a couple of repeat airplanes coming out of Seashell because it's a club much the same way as we have. We've had three commercial planes that we've gone to Transport Canada, three American planes we've gone to Transport Canada, and they've all been, what's the term they use, disciplined or sanctioned. They've all been sanctioned, means something. I don't know what they get. They won't tell us. So we don't just sit back and say, that's fine. So we look at every one of them, and those that are private pilots or first-time commercial, we send them a letter saying, this is what you've done. We've got the evidence. If you don't smarten up next time, we will send it to transport. And in most cases, we get a nice reply, or maybe not such a nice reply, but we get a reply back from the individual saying either I didn't do it or I'll never do it again. So this process is working. It's hard to believe, but we keep getting new guys doing it over and over again.
Exactly. It's going to, the patterns will go on.
My fault for training new pilots.
Yeah. The guys that are, that genuinely made the mistake or the error is because they haven't looked at the CFS in 20 years. And I mean,
that's true.
My sleepy little Qualicum, it's just sleepy little Qualicum. What could possibly go wrong or who could we have been by doing this? And I don't think they go out to intentionally fly 500 feet over fixed smart or stay over quantum woods. But some do it out of a lack of knowledge and what the pattern is.
Since we've been sending the letter out, we've had incredible success.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
We haven't had repeats. And I think that's pretty good.
Yeah.
One last thing for Paul. Once all this is done, then we'll revisit the signage. Okay. You're thinking of a hammer that smacks them in the head. There's nothing, it doesn't seem to get their attention.
You should get one of those smiley faces that says smile, you're on camera.
How about an up and down post and you got to put 10 cents in, read this sign and then it goes up. Anyway, enough of that.
All right. Thanks. Gord, anything from Roundhill?
Just let everybody know that we'll be starting our operations. We're doing some recertification flights for some of our instructors and whatever this weekend. And then full operations start again on April 21st. So watch for parachutes in the air. Please do not run into us.
Question I have for you, Gord, on that. Are you jumping back into Manners at the riding ring or back into the airport this trip?
No, we'll be back out in Nooth Bay at Arbutus Meadows. So same location as last year. We'll be filing a NOTAM the next couple of days. And we're actually working with Nav Canada to get a seasonal CYAT put in place as well, which will hopefully help us in reducing the number of visitors to our area.
Did you ever get that NOTAM file for Qualicum Beach? Remember last year you would only see that NOTAM if you searched for the en route one? If somebody just searches the NOTAM for Qualicum Beach, it doesn't come up.
Yeah, it's more to do with the NOTAM system than it has to do with the actual NOTAM itself. It has been added onto the CFS. If you read to the very bottom of the Qualicum Beach CFS, it says parachute operations 7 miles southeast or
whatever.
We're doing what we can to get the word out. Last year, COPA put out an article in their magazine, and we've been all over the Facebook groups and talking to all those different flight schools up and down the West Coast to let them know
Gord, if you, Transport Canada has the authority to get Nav Canada to publish a NOTAM attached to an airport. I used to do that. So get all the David Gagliardi, tell him it's a flight safety issue, and see what he can do.
Okay, yeah, I'll try that. I actually spoke to the head NOTAM guys with Nav Canada in Ottawa last year. Yeah, but you're right. If I can put it to transport as a safety issue, I might have more success.
Yeah, they'll tell transport in Afghan. They won't ask.
Yeah, that'll happen with the CYA as well. I actually know somebody who created a separate training area, the one in Souk, if anybody knows the Victoria training areas. They created a whole separate one because, again, it was a safety issue. So you can get in touch with those types of people to
get to that.
Excellent. Thank you, and welcome back, Gord. I hope you have a good season.
Great. Thanks, Robert.
John, roundtable. All right, perfect. Thank you, Paul.
And thank you. You run a really good meeting, Councillor Gilmore. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I have just one point that came up. Received an email from another member of the community here regarding leaded fuel still being used in coal. And of course, not being a pilot, didn't realize about leaded fuel, but going through and reading the information that I could, it's obviously a safety issue to keep using leaded fuel. I'm just wondering, how is there any way to let general public know that? I mean, if they don't put leaded fuel in the airplane, it might be coming down in your backyard.
Yeah, so Mr. Schwab and I had a very nice conversation about this last week when we met. There are residents that have written in asking to come be delegations to this committee and talk about that issue of leaded fuel in the aircraft. Now, anyone that has a hint of knowledge about aviation or an aircraft knows that, you know, that type of business isn't going to work. We have also let that resident know and other residents know that this committee is not the type of committee that takes delegations. This committee operates on council's behalf and deals with recommendations from council. If someone had an issue, per se, with leaded fuel, they can request the delegation to council and present their facts and information to council. The residents were also aware that this type of of decision making and processes out of a municipality's capacity. If you want a discussion to happen or something to happen, you got to talk to the federal government and see what they'll come up with to do. Otherwise, you know, it is it's really a non-starter discussion for perhaps the airport users and the town as the governing body. So all that was dealt with and talked about, and the residents will have to take other avenues should they want.
Thank you for that. Just a quick follow-up. Did the I saw in our last meeting minutes replacement of the fuel tank. Has that happened, or grant money coming forward for that?
Mr. Schwab.
No, I mean, most of our grants were turned down from last year. Well, actually, all of our grants for the airport were turned down from 2020. The airport fuel tank is an issue we know we have to deal with. It's going to be a large expense, and I think it is going to sit on the books until we can budget for it and have a proper strategy as to what that's going to look like. It won't happen this year. That is a definite guarantee.
Thank you. Brian, round table.
Well, I think everything's been covered as far as I'm concerned. I do feel a little bit of frustration that I feel you've garnered a whole bunch of information from people that are in the aviation industry, if you will, that we work with our livings at it. I feel sometimes that the committee is rather toothless in the fact that it's all been explained. Everybody just might, I think we could save a lot of trouble if we could settle a lot of this stuff and go with proper information to council with recommendations from people that are out here, such as Thailand, these proactive or prorated and that kind of stuff at all. That I could make comments on. I mean, the rest of it is the cost of operating an airline company. We want to keep our costs as low as possible, obviously, but we all realize that this airport survived, and it's been one of our Sunwest helicopters models that we contribute. Like, we've always doubled our airport landing fees and stuff like that in the spirit of, let's make this airport work. We try to buy every ounce of fuel that we can here just to make this airport work. And for us as a group of airport users, I think we're solidly contributing within reason to make it as smooth a transition as we possibly can so that there's no big, massive airport landing fees injected, sudden rise of 400% or something like that. That's unsustainable for the way the industry is right now, as far as I can see from operating here for like 28 years now.
And thank you. And we'll make one comment. We take all the comments that are given at these committees, and no committee is toothless. And what the words I'm saying are not fluff. All of our committees do have teeth. I chair three of our committees, this one, Parks and Recreation and Environment and Sustainability. Every recommendation that comes from any of my committees gets put onto an agenda with council. So they're not my committees, they're council committees, but any committee that I am chairing or liaisoning with, everything will go to council one way or another, whether it's through a discussion, in a room as just a meeting of council, or whether it's an actual governing meeting when we're in the chambers. One or the other, every comment will end up going to council.
Okay, I appreciate that because for the first time in a lot, I've been on the council for over 25 years as well, and this is the first meeting where it's been a very frank discussion and very blunt answers to the questions that are on people's minds, and I appreciate your frankness and candid and that's your response to that.
Thank you, I appreciate that. Pavel, round table?
Yes, I would like to ask about the IFR approaches. Are they still listed in NOTAM, and are they restricted?
The staff, either Mr. Schwab or Jeff?
I'm not sure what you mean.
I talked to the fuel pilots, and they said in the NOTAM it's listed the IFR approaches are not allowed in Qualicum.
That's not true. You better stop listening to pilots.
Okay.
That's the first thing. IFR approaches to Nanaimo and Qualicum Beach have been prohibited for, 3-4 years now at least. You can still get them, but officially you cannot, and that's because of traffic density. Probably could have got them, given the traffic was down. So it's got nothing to do with Qualicum. It was Vancouver put it out. Because of traffic up and down the coast.
Okay.
So then, but the IFR approach, if you need an IFR approach, it's there and it's fully functioning. The town pays for it. We have one approach to runway 29, which is a NAV Canada approach, which we do not pay for. The one at the other end and the two departures are paid for by, or are maintained by a private third-party company. We pay annual fees for those, to a single approach and two departures.
Okay.
So they're all valid and very usable.
Okay. That was just my question. If we're going to start the training IFRs over here, so I would like to be capable to use them.
Okay, you can use them. Once again, we're getting off topic here. You can use them. You may not get an IFR clearance to use them.
Oh, okay, that's what it is.
You may have to go out and fly a vehicle, which is just fine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay, thanks. And I would like to add, I think we should talk more together and working together as a team, town of Qualicum staff and council, and anybody have something to say about the airport operation and using and all the stuff. I think we can create a nice relationship between the town and council and build some sustainable airport over here.
So thank you, Pavel. Mike?
I don't have a whole lot to say. I just wanted to express my gratitude again, and it's great to be added in on this. So thank you for that. There's one topic and something that maybe to future explore that I'd be interested in is, you know, we've talked extensively about charging people who use this for commercial operating, the people who are here and making in the town, you know, making money that way. And obviously, again, we all understand that there has to be an income and stuff, but there's alternative ways of doing that too. And I'd love to explore, you know, putting on events. Like I wonder, I never got to experience an air show, but I assume that probably brought in money for the airport and for the town. And there's other ways of doing that too. And I've had these ideas, and I'd love to put on events that draw people into the airport. That's how you make money. If you get people to come here, you get them to kind of pay a $10 fee, have a barbecue, whatever it is. Obviously, there's COVID restrictions, and so you can't quite do that these days. But even if we had like almost like a flying competition, a spot landing or something, these are things that have been done before all across the country, and they are an income revenue. One thing that I thought of that used to be done there are like pumpkin drops, spot landing competitions, that kind of stuff. And who you can promote people to come in, use our airport, and pay to use it as well, recreationally wise, not just commercially wise. There's you know, little bits of income there at least. And I also just thought I'd say, if anybody ever is interested, or anybody who's not a pilot here or interested in flying and ever wants to go see it, see what it's all about, let me know. And happy to share what aviation is all about with anyone.
As a comment to that, we used to do that on a regular basis years ago, Mike.
Sorry, what was that? The pumpkin drop or the
pumpkin drops and flower drops and target drops, all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
It'd be a different. Did you do it here at the airport? I was wondering about that. Okay. See, you could charge people for that. You know, like $10 a bag of flour or something, and it costs us nothing, and everybody gets to have fun, and there's money that's made. And for fuel sales, restaurant use. I've also personally bought bikes. For the flying club out of my own pocket, and I've got a sign up, and I've posted it on social media and stuff that says, come fly in, use these bikes, go explore town, that kind of stuff. So the airport can be a draw strictly for recreation too, not just commercial use. So I'm happy. I'm all about promoting aviation, so I'm happy to help out and lead some of that stuff if that were possibilities that could be talked about.
Excellent. Thank you. Roundtable from staff, either Jeff or Mr. Schwab.
I said everything. The NOTAM is right here. IFR training, not authorized. But that doesn't mean you can't fly.
Did they say who can authorize?
It just says Cat 4, Qualicum Beach, IFR training, not authorized.
Okay.
I don't really have anything to add, Councillor Filmer. I think there's, you know, I agree there's been some good discussion here. I will address Mike's last comment on the money raising. I'm not saying it's not a good idea. I will say, though, without getting into too much great detail, our budgeting process here
would need to change because, I mean, it's no secret, and we've had this discussion in these meetings, that the pots of money aren't quite divided up that way, let's say. So when, you know, when we take in money from certain things, a lot of it is general revenue, and it does take a little bit more time to sort through those things. And that may be a process that we have to go to council to have a look at.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Schwab. I will just say one last thing. As for the new bylaw or the draft bylaw, once it goes to council, obviously staff have heard comments, I've heard comments. Once it goes back to council, should changes be made, I will make the request for it to come back to the committee for us to then, for the committee to then review those changes. So before anything else happens, obviously second reading would probably get approved, but further that it goes back to the committee for more digestion and see if the questions that were possibly made were what the committee was looking at. So you can have my word there that I will work. I'm not saying council won't approve that, but as a liaison, I will work to have it sent back to the committee. Gord, you had a comment there?
Yeah, just one quick question off of somebody else's question to Arnold. The fuel, so the tanks are almost expired. Like, are we going to be running into a fuel issue this year, or is this kind of like 2 years down the road, or what's the thought process there?
I don't really know the exact date. You know, we know that it's coming to the point where like a certification may expire or we will have to replace them. I just don't know what that date is. I don't know it off the top of my head. I would have to do some more research.
Okay, thank you.
All right. And if that is all, we will see everybody, I believe, in May.
Thank you.
All right. Have a good day, everyone.